CIN Files, the ultimate Bengals podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us today from Bengals.com is Jeff Hobson. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Hobson, C-I-N, and that's Jeff, G-E-O-F-F Hobson, C-I-N for Cincinnati. Jeff, how's it going today out in the Natty?
Short week, so everybody's a little bit geared up for that, trying to get that taste out of the mouth on Sunday.
Yeah, that was a very, very interesting loss for a lot of the game. It actually looked like that the Bengals were going to be able to take this, and then it just slowly slipped away in the fourth quarter as the Broncos came back, and then their young quarterback Trevor Siemian continued to surprise people. And I think he surprised the Bengals as well, who stacked 8-9 guys in the box, making sure that C.J. Anderson and the Broncos didn't get going on the ground, and they most certainly did not. Bengals ended to 2.3 yards a carry, but dared Siemian to beat them. Siemian responded with 312 yards, 4 touchdowns. I guess you pick your poison, and this was probably the right gamble. It just didn't happen to go the Bengals' way.
Well, I think you have to do that. You have to, when a guy's making his first road start, you have to dare him to beat you. And he made 2 great throws. They didn't get there on blitzes, and he made him pay. And that's what you're supposed to do as a professional quarterback. And he dared him to do it, and they did it. And that's how they get the 40. You know, they haven't given up 2 balls of 40 yards for touchdowns in the same game since Mike Zimmer and Paul Gunther have been calling the shots. So that was very surprising, to say the least.
Well, the Broncos went the other route. They basically tried to take away the passing game. Andy Dalton came into that game as the league's leading passer in yardage. They weren't able to completely lock down A.J. Green, but 77 yards on 8 catches isn't all that great for him. But it also meant they surrendered a bit of strength in their running game. Jeremy Hill looked really good, averaging almost 6 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns. There had to be, even in a disappointing loss, some takeaways that are pretty positive going forward.
Well, I think it's I think their running game had not been good the first 2 games. In the first drive, they were terrific. I mean, nobody runs on Denver like that the way they did, and they'd like to sustain it. I mean, after that first series, they averaged 2.2 yards per rush. So after Jeremy Hill went for 65 yards on 4 runs, so they'd like to be able to sustain that for more of the game. And I think that's obviously going to be a big matchup Thursday night because the Dolphins are next to last in the league and stopping the run.
That was pretty tough sledding when you consider you're facing a very good Broncos defense and they did not have Tyler Eifert, who's such a difference maker. He allows them to do so many things on offense when he's out there either blocking or catching, running the seam routes. He can do so many different things. Eifert's not expected to join the team for the Dolphins, but the word is he's getting close. That's got to be outstanding news for Bengals fans.
I mean, he's a difference maker. I mean, A.J. Green was talking about it today when getting a red zone. You know, they have trouble covering him. You know, I mean, who do you match him up with? He beats linebackers, he beats safeties. He's been known to beat corners down there. So putting him in the mix, that gives A.J. more room and Brandon LaFell more room and Jeremy Hill more room in the running game. So that's a guy that scored 13 touchdowns last year. So you take him out of the mix, it's been tough sledding down there without him.
Dre Kirkpatrick now with a hamstring injury with that short week, you get concerns about whether, one, if he can play, 2, if he'll be limited. Now, the Dolphins actually do have some pretty explosive wide receivers. You think about Jarvis Landry, you think about Devontae Parker. They have some guys that can be challenging to secondaries. What do they do if Dre Kirkpatrick can't play? Who steps up in their absence to try to stop that passing attack by Miami?
Well, they've got a couple guys, Josh Shaw, Darquez Denard, their first-round corner from 2014, who really hasn't played much because of injuries in his first 2 seasons. They really want to see what he can do. Josh Shaw has played pretty well, their fourth-round pick from 2015. So they've got some people to go to. Shaw has usually been in the slot. Denard can play the slot, but one of them obviously would have to go to the outside, and that's You know, it's going to be a they don't usually play out there. They can play out there. They haven't played a lot out there. So that'd be obviously a bad matchup to watch if Drake can't go.
One of the bigger things that we will get to add, Eifert's coming closer, but coming back this week, Vontaze Burfict is back. And, of course, he is a difference maker on defense. The guy's a dynamo all over the field making tackles and wreaking havoc. And he gets under the other team's skin, too. How does he change the defense for the Bengals just by his presence, let alone what he can do on the field?
Well, I think what's really underrated about him is what he brings mentally. The guy's got a genius football IQ. I mean, he's got great instincts, gets these guys lined up. He's the computer. He's the computer out there. He's on the same page with defensive coordinator Paul Gunther. They're like the same guy out there. Vontaze is Gunther's eyes and ears out on the field. I mean, he's always where he's supposed to be. And not only that, he gets these other guys lined up and where they're supposed to be. And they listen to him. He's the kind of guy that when he talks in a huddle, he listens. So, you know, you read all this stuff about the edge and he's always crossing the line and all this. Bengals don't see that. They see that as a guy who's a heart and soul of their defense and as a guy who gets them lined up and leads them by example and by knowing the X's and O's through and through.
There's always a tendency to respond to these losses and overreact when the Broncos come in and take a game on the road where, let's face it, the Bengals haven't lost a September home game in five seasons. So it's easy to overreact. Adam Jones directly talked about that when he said, or asked specifically, why would we hit the panic button? To me, that seems like it makes pretty good sense. It's not as if the Bengals have really been blown out of their games. They've been in every single game. They have lost teams. The two games they've lost were to good teams. They've lost to the Steelers, who admittedly looked terrible last weekend, but I think we understand they're better than that. And they lost to the defending Super Bowl champs. If you're the Bengals, this isn't time to panic, right? They're getting healthier. Seems like everything's really trending in the right direction.
Well, I think you got to remember that this team's been through a lot. The core of this team has been the five straight playoffs, and they've done it every which way but up. You know, they went wire to wire to win the North last year when they got off of that 8-0 start. Yet most of these guys are still around from 2012 when they started out 3-5 and won 7 of their last 8 to get a wild card when they beat the Steelers in the next to last game of the year in Pittsburgh. So these guys have been there, they've done it, and I think, you know, you're right, there is a sense that this is a team, this is going to be a November-December team because of the new weapons they have for Dalton, the fact that Eifert's going to be getting back, they've been missing Burfict, and they've got a lot of new players, they've got a lot of complimentary new players on defense like Marcus Hunt and Josh Shaw, guys who are playing a lot of snaps, the rookie linebacker Nick Vigil. So I think this team is thinking they're going to gel come November, but they got to get there. They got to get to November still in the race, and that's why at 1-2 it makes Thursday night's game just critical.
And that's what I was going to ask you. How important is it? You don't want to go 1-3 even if you're a confident team because you find yourself a little bit behind the eight ball. This is a game, even the fourth game of the season, that it does seem like this is, if not a must win, it's very, very important not only just for the 2-2 record, but to also kind of get those good vibes back, those good feelings back, and feel like you can start a roll, right?
Well, I tell you, when you're playing the AFC North, it's always like that. You know you can't get too far behind. And it's just like the old days now with the Ravens hopping in at 3-0. So now you get three teams, you know, you get a three-way war going again. And the Bengals are used to that. I mean, that's, you know, they're to make the playoffs 5 years in a row in the best division of football, I think it's something that doesn't get talked about enough. So they, more than anybody, know what's ahead. That 1-3 in the AFC North is just, that's back against the wall time. And that's why I think they're going to play probably with a lot of urgency. And like I said, they're a club that has ridden streaks. They know how to get there. They hit a lull in 2013, won the division by winning like six out of eight in the middle of the season. So it's a club that's been there, but 1-3 would be a no-no in the new look AFC North right now with Baltimore hopping back in at 3-0.
His name is Jeff Hobson. He's with Bengals.com. You know, guess where you want to go when you want to find out about the Bengals. That's the spot. And you can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Hobson, C-I-N. That's Jeff with the G-E-O-F-F, Hobson, C-I-N. Jeff, thank you so much for the insight. I'm with you. I think this is a very talented team. I think the best is yet to come. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Hope to talk to you soon.
Will do. Thanks a bunch for Jeff Hobson. Check him out at Bengals.com and follow him on Twitter. And we will be back getting a little more knowledge, specifically maybe about that AFC North, with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that anytime they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It was almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you, no Tom Brady. We're going to spot you, no Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win.
Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance. From the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's Buffalo. And you know fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they have Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had 8 starters that were our former first- or second-round draft picks. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year, with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to
lose
2 games. And so, oh, my gosh, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-to-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created. the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of a less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was a defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family is getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today?
Oh,
hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
Better option here. The difference, you had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most, the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both. But I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after two, you know, after three starts, he's better than Brock. But Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman. But does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy. But the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner. And Bill Belichick, doesn't matter who they play, I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fish is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold-weather Green Bay.
John, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Breeze is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense. Should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.